Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay, bisexual, or trans man. If you have any comments or questions that you would like to make during the broadcast, you can write me a note at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. So before I get started tonight with my show and my very wonderful guest, I just want to mention to people that I'm really excited to announce that sometime in the next 6 months, I'll be coming out with another edition of Straight Wives Shattered Lives. This will be volume 3. It's been a long time since my volume 2 came out. And since that time, I've met some wonderful women whose experiences have really touched my life, as I know they will touch yours. Even though all of us are in different situations, and even though all of us come from so many different backgrounds, the emotional impact of these marriages is the same across the board. No matter what nationality you are, no matter what color you are, or religion you are, the emotional impact and devastation is always the same. And by hearing other women's stories, it teaches us how to go through life in a better way, realizing that we're not alone anymore. So be on the lookout, Straight Wives Shattered Lives, Volume 3. So without any further ado, I'd like to say hello to my very special guest tonight, Dr. Ira Gelman. Ira, thank you so much for coming
everybody.
Back to the show.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, whenever you come here, you are always a big hit, I will say that, because you tell it as it is. The way that women need to hear it, right?
I hope so.
Yeah, you pull no punches. And Dr. Gelman, he's a specialist, his doctorate is in human sexuality, and he's very familiar with all kinds of behaviors and all kinds of different sexuality and all kinds of initials and letters to lead you to whatever you want to be. So that's why it's always a great resource, because he knows so much about this subject. I told Dr. Gelman that tonight I want to start off by reading an article by one of my favorite marriage and family therapists. She's an amazing woman, Dr. Margalef Celstad, and she has Stop Caretaking newsletter that comes out every month. And in this particular edition, it really hit home for me, as I know it will for many of you, and then I wanted to have Dr. Gelman comment on it. But it's about the effects of shame. Shame is different than guilt. We often get them mixed up. Guilt results from feeling bad about your actions. Shame is feeling bad about who you are. It's much more toxic. Shame is highly contagious. It's a large element of all relationships with a borderline or a narcissist. Shame is at the core of what is so painful for the borderline or narcissist. They desperately want to get rid of or hide their shameful feelings, so they work continuously to transfer those feelings onto you. Literally, everyone hates the feeling of shame. It signals rejection and denunciation. It makes you feel unworthy, and it puts you in jeopardy of being disowned and cast out of your relationships. BPNPs continuously move their shame onto you through criticism, blame, anger, and disapproval. They accuse you of causing all their negative feelings, inadequacies, unhappiness, faults, and problems. The BPNP also uses shame to keep you trying to win their approval, isolated from others, in a begging, subservient position, feeling powerless, wrong, and selfish. Shame leads to disillusionment, resentment, and hopelessness. It drains your energy and depletes your optimism. It also leads to addictions, depression, anxiety, and deterioration of self-esteem. Shame makes you question who you are and feel bad about your actions, motives, and feelings, and seriously ignore your own needs and self-care. How do you combat the hidden shame in yourself? First, recognize the emotional and physical signs. Shame makes you feel exhausted, depleted, anxious, depressed, annoyed, angry, and sad around the BPNP. That's borderline and narcissist. You will constantly feel sorry or worry about the BPNP. You may notice that you often have pain in your jaw, shoulders, head, or neck. GI issues, heart palpitations, and migraines are also common. Give yourself empathy. Caretakers are usually overly empathetic to the BPNP and very stingy with self-empathy. That is, you tend to feel and respond more to the BPNP's feelings and needs than you do your own. So it's important to get in touch with what you need, what you want, and your own preferences, yearnings, hopes, and dreams. Your emotional and physical care should be the basis for your decisions, not just what the BPNP wants. Despite what the BPNP has been saying, you are actually not selfish enough. Build up your self-compassion. Bring compassion to yourself means talking to yourself with love and understanding, treating yourself with consideration, and being truly thoughtful of your own needs, goals, and well-being. It means being on your own side. My book, Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship, offers a lot of good exercises to increase self-compassion. Stop trying to please the BPNP. As long as your top priority is to please and appease them, you will feel guilty and shameful because you can never do enough to please them. It can feel uncomfortable to start putting yourself first and focusing on what it takes to please you. It will take practice. Taking care of yourself is your primary job in life. No one else has that job but you. Tell the truth to yourself and others. It can be difficult to figure out the truth, but it's worth spending time doing it. Talking to a close friend, learning more about BPNP, journaling about your thoughts and feelings, and therapy can all be helpful in discovering your inner truth. To let go of shame, you have to come to terms with the reality of the BPNP's limitations, with your collusion with them. Then you need to start dealing with the problems in your relationship is causing in your life. Being honest with yourself, telling others what you really feel and need, and taking new action will require vulnerability and emotional support. And those are her words. And I think that many of us do suffer from shame because it's given to us by people who are in that situation. So I was hoping maybe, Ira, you could give some insight into personality disorders for our listening audience. Is it nature or nurture? Does it change at all? Can it change?
A person's not going to be able to change unless they go for, unless they can admit that they have something that needs to be changed. And the problem with borderline or narcissistic people is that they somehow have surrounded themselves with people for years that they've been able to get away with their inappropriateness. And I don't know if they just deny or they're unable to see their own issues. So when someone is in a relationship, and in this case we're talking married, gay or straight, doesn't make a difference, unless that person is going to go for some intensive therapy, there's no way you're going to change them. There's no way they're going to get better. And I know people don't like to hear this, but the reality is you have to break away from the person as peacefully as you can.
Do they ever really let you go, though? What about these personality types where you try to leave and they're always coming back, you know, wooing you and making demands on you and you're weak to start with, and you keep going back and thinking they can change? I find they just don't change. I mean, even with intense, I don't think most of them get intensive therapy because they don't think they're wrong about anything.
Well, yeah, that's where you have to make a clean cut. You know, my mom, rest her soul, she had a great saying, and it was, you hurt me once, shame on you. You hurt me twice, like I gave you a chance, another chance, shame on you. But by the third time, shame on me for allowing the person to walk all over you. And so for people who are who keep going back to these borderline or narcissistic personalities, like I said, if they're not going to be going and keep up intensive therapy, you need to separate yourself as much as you can. And these people don't respect weakness. So as far as breaking away, I mean, obviously if you have kids with the person, it complicates things. But in some situations, it's not a matter of something that's a great solution. It's a matter of picking the best of what you can at that moment. And living with someone like that, the longer it goes on, then one of the problems is the more normal it feels. And that new normal is very unhealthy. And when there are kids involved, people that want to stay together for the sake of the kids are actually, I believe, doing more damage. The kids will pick up things are not happy. And then when they see that, that becomes part of who they are and they're normal. So if you're trying to have your kids live a normal life and be healthy, you have to model for them what healthy behavior is. And having somebody that keeps coming at you and putting you down, that's not a way to live.
I always say to everyone, monkey see, monkey do, monkey act just like you. And, of course, when you're little and learning that cute little rhyme, it doesn't mean anything. But as an adult, when I look at it, and as a counselor, when I look at it, is that it's repeated behaviors, it's learned behaviors that you accept and things you're willing to take that your children see, and they either become victims like you are, or they become abusers like what's happening to you. Because I see it all the time with children, when a father's abusive to a mother, and this happens for years and years, and she doesn't stand up for herself, and all he has to do is control her and call her names and cursing her, then eventually the children do the same thing with their relationships because that's the only thing they know from. Would you say that's true? Learn behavior.
Oh, 100%. 100%. When people don't realize is that why would someone who grew up with that type of behavior become like that, it's because you just don't – it becomes part of who you are. An analogy is if you're standing and sitting next to a piece of I mean, now I'm talking like literally like garbage that smells. You can go and take a shower as often as you want and change your clothes. You keep sitting next to that garbage, you're going to keep stinking all over again no matter how many times you wash. So until that garbage is removed, you're not going to be able to be clean. So emotionally speaking, a person has to know when it's time to say enough is enough, and I have to, for my sake and the sake of my kids, try to rebuild a healthy situation.
I think that's very true, and I also think the longer you stay in an abusive situation, as you mentioned, that becomes your new normal, and you know, so it doesn't seem like it's that terrible because you've justified all along why you can stay in that relationship. And sometimes I know more than anyone, trust me, it's so hard to get out of these relationships depending on the personality disorder that, you know, you're living with. And some of these men are extremely abusive emotionally. Some of them are even physically abusive. But I know what it's like to feel worthless because in my own marriage to a gay man, that's how I was made to feel. And all of my feelings were not validated. I was told that, you know, I was crazy, that I'm imagining things, that, you know, I'm not a good wife, I'm not a good mother. And you hear these messages every day, day in and day out, and you start believing them. And that's why I could see I started off in a strong position with my ex-husband, and within a few years, I was a dish rag. I mean, people didn't recognize who I was. I didn't recognize who I was because I didn't know anymore who I was. Because I lost who I was. And I think that's the danger when you live with people who day in and day out sit and knock you down, you just have a hard time standing up. And the longer you stay, I understand it's more like, you know, training you like any kind of other, you know, kind of situation where you're in with somebody who's abusive and you're, you know, a victim of that. And I know it's hard to get out. So do you have any tips for how women who are already beaten down can start getting stronger?
Well, you know, the article you read about spoke about secrets, and, you know, they have to realize there's a difference between, you know, personal business versus a secret. Personal business is your stuff that you only share, you know, with like a few close friends or a few close family members. When people keep secrets, though, it's like a cancer. That's something that they don't want to even share with a therapist or even with anyone in their family. So if a person could accept they have to stop keeping a secret, that's one of the first steps. And then recognize that they didn't cause it and they can't do anything to control it. That unless that person is willing to go for intensive therapy, because they've been like this for years, they're in a losing situation. But the person has to first believe that they're deserving of better and that they are not, they should not accept the abuse that they're getting. And that usually requires a certain amount of self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could bottle that. I don't have any easy answers for that except to take a look at yourself in the mirror and say, I deserve better, and I will try to do better for myself and my family.
And I often find that this is a problem that a lot of women who get into these abusive situations came from abusive situations. In other words, they came from parents where there was all kinds of issues, from mental illness to alcoholism to drug addiction to poverty, you know, self-imposed poverty because of all these other issues. You know, they come from abuse where they were physically abused or sexually abused, and they really don't have that high esteem. You know, they've never had it because of whatever the situations were. And now they're just going to pass it on to another generation. I mean, it's just going to be, every generation is going to be said in the same thing, because when you come from dysfunction, it's often that you move into dysfunction. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, if
too.
They can't do it for themselves, they have to at least talk themselves into believing they have to do it for their kids.
Mm-hmm. So,
but unfortunately, No, I was going to say, unfortunately, like you said, if somebody came from an abusive situation, they probably can't go to their father because he was a big part of where this came from. The mother they can't really go to because she modeled, you know, you put up with it. So it's very, very isolating. And isolation is a killer.
You know, a little earlier you were talking about secrets. and how they impact a family. And I think the whole issue of having a gay husband where the secret is he's hiding his sexuality really takes a tremendous toll on the family. And, you know, many of us talk about this. This is why we're coming out with our third edition of Straight Wives, Shattered Lives 3, is because we're going to talk more about the emotional impact of living with someone day to day who's living a lie and who's making you the cause of their unhappiness. Because they feel that they're trapped in a marriage that they created. I mean, we didn't go running after them and tie them down. You know, they wanted to get into a marriage. They were hoping that they could get through life being in a marriage. They were hoping maybe, I acknowledge this all the time, maybe they wouldn't be gay if they got married or they could perform sexually, because not all gay people can perform heterosexually. Some can, and those who can, I think, often think, well, maybe I'm not really gay. And even though gay acceptance has come so far from when I was, you know, growing up, it's still not an easy life in many places in this country and in the world. I mean, let's face it, in certain countries, like in the Middle East, they still throw you off the roof if you're gay. And there's still a lot of social stigma in this country, maybe not in the big cities as much, but in other places, where it's really not acceptable. So if you can be straight and you think you can perform sexually with a woman and those feelings would change, I can see where some men would definitely feel that this will change their whole life. But, of course, in time it doesn't. So I guess the big question that people keep asking, maybe you can answer this, when these men go into marriages maybe in their 20s, late 20s, early 30s, and they're able to perform with you as a man, and even if it's not the best, they're still able to pull off the performance every now and then, you know, what changes so much when you hit your 30s and 40s? Why does it seem like that's when everything just gets out of control for men, where they can't control their gay homosexuality anymore? Is there something about that number?
It's like we all have biological drives to fulfill. And sometimes they're healthy drives, and unfortunately other times they're unhealthy drives. So if a gay man, and people need to realize that sexual orientation is not solely based on behavior, meaning the orientation of a person is very heavily tied up into what our fantasies are. And people don't understand the most sexual part of the body, it's not the genitalia, it's the brain. So if anybody's wondering how does a gay man perform with a woman, it's really simple. His fantasies are all with other men. Now that first he'll be able to get away with, especially when he's in his 20s or early, you know, let's say 30s, because as the male body is young, it still is able to be turned on much quicker. I mean, plain and simple. So anything that is denied, you know, the forbidden fruit is always the sweetest. So for a gay man that has basically denied who he is, that nature is still there. And then he reaches a certain age where he's not able to control his urges anymore. And he needs to have, instead of the fantasy, he now needs the drive to fulfill his homosexual fantasies. So up until a while, you know, he was able to deny it. But after that, he's not able to anymore.
Now, some men tell their wives that they're gay, but they've never acted on it and never will. What do you think about that statement?
It's walking on a minefield. You can't deny your biological urges, and I don't think it's a good idea to now, you know, tie the knot with somebody that says that, because they may mean it. I don't even believe that the men are lying. Unfortunately, the men aren't being honest with themselves. So if you can't be honest with yourself for maybe religious or family reasons, it's impossible to be honest with anyone else. So they may say that, but their orientation is to be gay. And sooner or later, there's going to be an attraction, You know, you've heard of the term like gaydar. I mean, that's like a real thing. And if someone seeks them out, even though they were minding their business, they might not be able to reject the advance that's coming at them. So I would not, you know, it's wishful thinking to think that somebody can say that I'm gay or I have gay fantasies, but, you know, I'm never going to, you know, like cheat on you. It's a nice concept, but it's not reality.
Are some of these men able to compartmentalize so that they're living two lives and either way. And just have, you know, a family where they have their one life and then it doesn't seem to affect the fact they're having another life, having, you know, sexual encounters with men, and they still don't consider themselves gay because they're not involved in relationships. Only sex.
Yeah, I mean, there are men that can do that, and they maybe justify, you know, there's a term like rationalization. It's where we know we're doing something that we shouldn't be, so we concoct some type of reality to make what we're doing to justify it. So if a gay man is on the side keeping it quiet but is having sex with another man, he may be justifying it by saying, but, you know, there's no emotional connection. But the fact is, he's still cheating on his wife. Whether it's with a woman or a man, you know, what difference does it make? Now, there are some women that may say, well, you know, if he's going to cheat on me, I'd rather it would be with a man. And if they want to live like that, that's their business, you know, that's their prerogative. But if you don't want to live like that, and I think most women don't want to live like that, then there really is no choice but to try and part as much as friends as you can. And I can't group all gay men that marry, you know, women in one group. Some, like you said earlier, really believe in their immaturity, that if they marry a woman and could have sex with a woman, then they're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of other men, and we can't give percentages because who knows, that typically, at least historically, would marry a woman and have kids because that would be the perfect cover. Like, who's going to suspect that a man is gay if, you know, he's married and he has a kid or two?
Yeah, I mean, I find it confusing sometimes because I look back to my own life and back, you know, when I was in that situation was in 1978. We didn't have computers. We didn't have technology. And we really didn't have a lot of knowledge on the subject. And if I go back and I think about my ex-husband, when he wanted to marry me, okay, I mean, I really believe in my heart that he loved me to the best of his ability. And that his real downfall, I used to say, wasn't that he was gay. It was all the other stuff, you know, the narcissist and the sociopathic behaviors he had. But I still feel a part of him loved me to the best of his capacity. But it wasn't
Did, and that's what I think is confusing to so many people, is that he may have truly loved you, but that it's like someone, you know, who's abusing someone. You still can love someone that you abuse. Once you have a behavior that becomes part of you, it's part of you, but it doesn't mean that you still don't love this person. And I think what happens is when women are married to someone gay, you know, the men can still be very charismatic and apologetic and make all these promises. And in some cases, the men are honest in that they really think they can change. But in other cases, they know they can't change because they just don't want anything that's going to blow their cover. So in any relationship, you still could love someone, even if there's no abuse. People don't understand that. You could have a feeling and love someone, but there's a word a lot of people forget, and that's called compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
And this is especially true in heterosexual relationships. You can have a strong attraction to someone. You could have, you know, the feelings of love for someone, but that doesn't mean you're compatible. And you can't force compatibility. And that's
or
one of the components.
They have the opposite. How about with a gay husband? Because I hear a lot of this from women. I mean, some women have abusive marriages, for sure, but not all. Some women will say to me, we were the best of friends. We were very compatible. We did every single thing together. They can't understand how this is happening. They've had 20 wonderful years together with their husbands, and that's the whole key word, compatibility, like sexuality. Okay, so many of them say to me, well, in all marriages, after a while, you know, you don't have sex as much as you did when you were younger. And they attribute that, you know, the sexual fall-off in their marriages to that. But they say, he was my best friend, we did everything together, you know, so that was compatibility. But in the sense where somebody's gay, it's still not going to work, right?
Unless they're willing to accept it, you know? It's
right,
like
now
I've
I'm saying they're not willing.
If they're not willing,
no.
They can still be best friends, but they're not compatible because let's face it, a sexual relationship between two people is a very important part of who they are. It's pleasure.
Uh-huh.
It has
uh-huh.
to do with your self-esteem.
Uh-huh.
So that compatibility never did exist, and that is a major component of a relationship, is to feel, you know, sexually, you know, satisfied and to express your love in a way that you're trying to be a giving person.
Uh-huh.
And that is taken away if your partner is gay.
And that's the
whole
thing.
But if you're willing
to
accept it, you know, then accept it. It's like there are people who know their spouse is cheating on them. Gay or straight, doesn't matter. And their attitude is, as long as, you know, he comes home, you know, on most nights and, you know, he's paying the bills, I'm willing to look the other way.
Right. Well, I think that women in our situation, it's a little bit different, only because the men don't want to be there, and so they're taking their frustrations out on their wives. They're knocking them down. I mean, to me, they take away your sense of, you know, who you are sexually. They demean you and belittle you about your, you know, sexuality. To me, there's nothing worse than a man who tells his wife that I can't have sex with you because you smell or you have bad breath. You know, it takes away from that woman any sense of sexual esteem that she has. And
exactly.
To me, it's a crime if he's trying to knock her down so that he doesn't have to have sex with her. And that's what they do
course.
In many cases.
And that's a man who hasn't accepted who he is, and so then he needs to find blame, you know, to rationalize his behavior.
Right.
And a woman
and
who's trapped in that, it, you know, needs a friend, or in this case, a support group. This is why, like as we were talking before about, you know, what advice do I have for women? Well, if they can't get support from their own family, then they need to be part of a support group with other women that have been in similar situations, because that's the people you're going to feel the least self-conscious around. Because they've gone through it, and you're not going to feel like you're being judged because you're with people that know exactly, you know, as much as they can what you're going through. So finding a support group is incredibly important, just to give yourself an emotional, you know, ally in dealing with a difficult situation, because after a while, you know, a person probably feels, you know, there's something wrong with me. But when they can reach out and hear the same thing from someone else, now something suddenly clicks, and it's like, wow, we're really not the ones that aren't okay. We just have to stick up for ourselves.
And that's another problem. You know, it's, when the men come out today, men are cheered on, and they're told how brave they are, and how wonderful they are because they came out. And they become champions without any thought at all about how the wife has suffered through all these years. You know, they come out as being the brave ones. And I would say nobody says how brave their wives were living in a world that was a fake world for them when they were being demeaned and being put down and being sexually neglected. I mean, nobody cheers for the women saying, wow, you know, you stood through all that and you survived it. And so it's like we're double whammied. It's bad enough that, you know, we have to go through the whole situation. And then the general public at large has no sympathy or empathy. You know, they're cheering for the man for being brave. And I think
no,
that,
you're
100% really...
right. That is so true.
Mm-hmm.
That is so true. You know, especially in today's PC world, yeah, everybody's applauded for being true to themselves, but no one is thinking of, you know, all the people that you screwed over, you know, to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, bravo for you, but, like, shame on you for having affected, in some cases, ruined, you know, so many other people's lives.
So even, like, when I think about about a year and a half or 2 years ago when Joel Grey came out and, you know, he admitted that he had a lover, he was gay for many years, back, you know, with this lover. And he says, well, the best years of my life were the years I spent with my wife. Well, that's nice. What about the best years of her life? I mean, I hear her talking about it. You know, these men were taken care of by women because I think as women, where we feel that we're losing these men, we internalize a lot of it as our own blame and our own lack of being able to fulfill them. You know, we keep trying harder and harder and never having the satisfaction of feeling that we've done enough. Because they're still not interested in us in bed, and they're still not interested in us as women. So we look at that as our own personal failure, and nobody seems to acknowledge what it takes out of our lives. You know, how much hurt that we have to go through, how much shame and guilt that we feel. It's always just,
yeah.
Let's say hooray for the guy.
No, you nailed it. You nailed it. I mean, maybe... You know, there's always, it's like clickbait, you know, right now, you know, the coronavirus, that's taking all the news. You know, the news needs something to talk about. Like when they spoke about transgender bathrooms, there's very few schools in the whole country that have any issues with how to handle that. But the way the news made it out to be, you would think, you know, in every school there is like, you know, something, you know, terrible going on. So right now with the PC culture, the pendulum is just, you know, to champion, you know, the gay man, and, you know, to say, you know, wow, it's great that he's come out. Hopefully the pendulum is going to go, and as you said, show that women are being walked all over. And we need to remember that they have been victimized here. And so you could still applaud one person, but at the same time, don't make them ignore, you know, the damage that they have caused.
Exactly. And that's why they don't feel they really have to meet, you know, stand up to the plate and do the responsible thing, which is support their family. You know, I say to my gay men that I you know, counsel and help them with their coming out issues. And I say, do the right thing. You know, anybody can forgive you for a mistake. And the mistake of thinking that you could keep this marriage together, that is a mistake. But you can fix that mistake to some degree by being responsible now that you're going to tell your wife you're leaving her and at least be responsible financially and emotionally while she makes this adjustment. You know, by the time these men come out, they're ready to be on the run, and they come to me like 3 weeks later. Well, I told her, how come she's not over it yet? Like, all it's going to take is a few weeks and you should
yeah.
be fine. And that's not how it works after years of damage, right?
Of course, of course.
No,
3 weeks, you're still like numb in disbelief, you know. Yeah, there's no one size fits all. In some cases, some women, you know, they knew that something wasn't right from the beginning, but they kind of ignored it. In other cases, it could be someone who maybe was very inexperienced sexually, and if they were only having sex like once a month or so, thought that was like normal.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, but people should not blame, women should not blame themselves, because like you had said, historically, there was, you didn't have, you couldn't do private research online, because that is a very big, there's a lot of garbage online, but the benefit is there is still good stuff that is out there, and a person could have, you know, as much, you know, I guess everything we look at, you know, someone down the line could see what we're looking at. But for the most part, you know, it's the most private way of of trying to do research. And going back, you know, 20 years ago, you didn't have that. And then you have, you know, the family issues, you know, if, you know, nobody wants to tell their parents, if the man is still denying that he's gay, then he's going to want to cling to the marriage for as long as he can because he wants to keep the secret for as long as he can.
Well, that's true. And a lot of times, okay.
Yeah, depending on certain parts of the country you live in, like you said, not every place around the country is gay friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, it's in their best interest, if they're in their selfish interest, to keep the facade going. And then if the woman, you know, is embarrassed, which, you know, most are, then they're going to want to keep the lie because they don't want anybody to know, you know, what they're really living through. Kind of changes all their Facebook pictures, you know.
Yeah, well, that's true. But also, there's still a lot of shame, as we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, with the whole stigma of being married to somebody who's gay. Because people look at you differently. You know, it's one thing to say, I'm getting a divorce because things didn't work out, and, you know, we're two different people going in a different direction. But when gay is the reason why you're getting divorced, people view you differently. Because people are still so ignorant when it comes to gay. Like, they'll say, well, was he gay when you married him? What did you do to make him gay? He had children with you. Obviously, he could have sex. Why doesn't he want to have sex anymore? You know, they're still questioning us. And then the families, they alienate us. A lot of these mothers really blame us for their sons being gay. You know, they were looking for some kind of miracle that we couldn't perform for them. They knew their sons were gay. I mean, my ex-mother-in-law, she knew her son was gay. He had plenty of gay encounters. It was her duty to warn me before I got married to him. And, I mean, she did warn me that he's no good, but she did not mention the word gay. So,
well,
if
she
I
probably
known
hoped
me,
that you were going to be able to, you know, you'd be the magic cure.
Exactly, and that's what they're hoping for. And then when we can't cure them, because gay is not a cure thing, then they blame us that they were married to us, they wanted to be straight, but obviously we fell down on the job, and that's why they're still gay. So a lot of mother-in-laws, they break away. They don't want to have anything to do with us. We don't have a, you know, that's very hard for some of these women who always thought they had a family with their husband's family. And now all of a sudden they don't want to see them anymore. They're blaming them. You didn't try hard enough. You weren't a good enough wife. You know, these are things we go through that straight wives of straight men don't go through. So we have all the emotional garbage that comes with being married to somebody of a different sexuality. And it doesn't matter if it's gay, bisexual, trans, confused, asexual, whatever your sexuality is. I don't go anymore and say people are straight. I just say say people are gay. I just call them unstraights. Because, you know, they can be anywhere along whatever line they want to be. I'm tired of hearing that sexuality is fluid. I mean, it's not fluid for everybody, right?
No, I don't think it's fluid for the vast majority of people. You know, once again, people, you know, you read articles, and people need to realize this to the audience that, you know, in the world of academia, getting published is everything. I used to think that was a fallacy or an exaggeration. But, you know, after I was in my PhD program and received it, I can tell you, if someone's applying for a job, let's say to be a college professor, they don't care how good a therapist you are or how good a teacher you are. The very first thing on there is they want to see articles that you've written. So people need to realize that just because you read something, like, for example, you know, how to cure someone who's gay, it's just there in order for the person to be published. So when you're trying to gain information, it's important to gain information that is accurate. And just because it's out in print does not mean, you know, anything. So for someone to believe that, you know, they can be changed, you know, it's you can deny who you are, but you can't change who you are.
I think that's a really important point. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, when people use the term, you know, I've been cured, There's a difference between being cured and between denying who you are. And for gay men historically that claim they were cured, that really wasn't true for the vast, vast majority of them. First off, people lie. And in order, you know, once again, to get published, you know, I've read work from people out there that said, you know, you can teach alcoholics, you know, how to drink responsibly or uncontrollably. Well, it's just not true. Once somebody, you know, there's a difference between a heavy drinker versus an alcoholic. And once somebody has been dependent on a drug, they become a slave to that drug. And they might be able to control themselves up to a point, but there will come a point where they will lose total control and be a full-blown alcoholic all over again. They have to totally abstain. And that is why in the addictions world, you know, somebody will say, even if they haven't had a drink in 20 years, hello, I am still an alcoholic, because they realize how fast they can fall back. So going back to a gay man, if he's trying to change who he is, and I'm sure you've done with this, the goal of therapy should be, no, be true to yourself and accept who you are. But don't, you know, try, you know, to affect, you know, to put another woman, you know, don't lie and misrepresent who you are to someone else. And if you or if it's too late for that, well, it's time now to be as honest as you can.
And the truth does hurt. I'm not saying it won't hurt, but I think the lies hurt so much more than the truth in this situation. I mean, no woman wants to have to sit and wonder for the rest of her life what she's done wrong in a situation that she had no choice in. And I always say it doesn't matter how wonderful you are, how beautiful you are, how nurturing you are, when your husband doesn't want you because he's gay, it has nothing to do with you, it's him. But it's so hard to have women believe that. You know, once they believe that they're at fault, and once the husbands start throwing it at them all the time, if you weren't so demanding, if you weren't so, you know, dirty, if you weren't so this, if you could cook better, clean better, you know, then
well,
maybe.
That's for the gay men that are abusive, because then
right.
What they've done is, you know, they don't want to admit the truth to themselves, so they have to find someone else to blame. And for the women, it becomes what's known as learned helplessness, where especially if they came from a family where they did not have strong support. And I cannot overestimate the importance of the relationship between a daughter and her father. Whenever I hear, you know, whenever I'm asked questions or comments about, you know, why do women, why are they attracted or end up with these guys who are just plain no good? My very first question is, tell me the relationship this woman had with her father. Now, I know there are some women out there that are probably throwing things against the wall right now, saying that they had a wonderful relationship with their father. So let's understand, I am not saying everybody and 100% of the time. But I will say, and I'll give an example. I this past year was working. I think everybody knows I'm an educator. Well, if you don't know, I'm an educator, but I also am a therapist, and I was working with kids. And out of the vast, vast majority of the kids, and I mean like 9 out of 10, the common denominator was there was no father in the picture. Either he was in jail or he left and just did not keep in touch with them. But there was no father around, and that created a tremendous amount of issues with the kids, whether they were boys or girls. So I'm not trying to say in this case that every woman that is with a gay man, you know, had a bad relationship with her father, but I'm just saying, generally speaking, a lot more than half of the time, that has been a major problem. And I'm only talking about this because If the woman does not have a strong family support system, it only complicates the situation because of the embarrassment and possibly hearing, you mentioned the mother-in-law blaming the daughter-in-law. Well, you know, there are women whose own parents are going to blame them, especially if the guy is charming and is likable. Then they're going to say, like, this is a nice guy and he's a handsome guy. I mean, gay men do definitely, and again, I'm generalizing, but gay men tend to keep themselves in better shape as they get older than heterosexual men. So you could have a woman's family, you know, say to her, you know, he's an attractive looking guy, you know, you have everything. What did you do to blow it? And the answer is nothing. So the lack of
people don't
want to
hear it. It's like, it's when I worked at this company previously before I had my own, you know, school. And there was a woman there who really loved my ex-husband because he was charming. He was good looking. He was funny. He was a narcissist and he knew how to draw a crowd. And whenever she would see him on a, every day or every other day, she would say to me, oh, he's so handsome. Oh, he's so nice. And then finally she said to me, I don't understand. How could you ever leave him? And I said, well, it was easy. I said, you know, he's gay. And she says, well, everybody has something. Nobody's perfect. And that was her.
Well, she's message. Like, you know, she's not even someone you know, you should even waste your time talking to. It's that simple. There are people out there that, you know, first off, you know, does she even have a relationship with you where it was appropriate for her to ask you that question? And people need to realize that, yeah, when you're dealing with your own life, worrying about gossip or what other people think, screw them. You shouldn't respect somebody who is going to gossip about you. Because when you gossip about somebody, it says a lot more about you than it does about the person you're trying to trash. People
That's
that
so
have
true.
Empty lives are trying to fill it, you know, by trashing other people. So if anybody, you know, is listening in the audience and is worried about what someone is going to think, if they're a good person worth respecting, they will support you. If they're not going to support you, then this is someone who is just not worth having in your life. And when it comes to family, I understand it gets more complicated. But that's where I'll go back to saying being part of a support group is incredibly, incredibly important because they may be the only people that you feel comfortable in sharing, you know, what's going on with your life. And it's not like the talking, you know, again, when women are here listening to this, they're probably saying, you know, I could talk to them blue in my face. It's not going to change anything. When you feel isolated, it makes things more heavy. It makes it more difficult. When you can share and connect with other people, it helps you think and feel differently and actually can help you get more confidence and not let somebody, you know, beat you up emotionally if that's what's happening. And this is true of any therapy. You know, the therapy can't change like life circumstances, but it can help you become less alienated and then maybe work towards changing your life circumstances. But that doesn't mean we're going to wave a magic wand and give everybody what they want. That's not real life. And sometimes all the choices stink, but you have to make the best of those choices that works for you. And, you know, if there's kids, for the kids as well.
Have you dealt with any marriages or relationships that are successful like this, where people stay together and they just live with it?
I haven't dealt with them, but I know of some that, yeah, whether, and I'm talking whether it's gay or, you know, in this case, the only ones I know of that are heterosexual, it's always the husband that has a girlfriend on the side. And the few cases like this that I know, the wives knew. You know, it's kind of like a European system. I think it was the French president, François Mitterrand, that, you know, when he died, his mistress that he had a daughter with, you know, she was at his funeral. His wife knew. You know, the Europeans tend to look at things differently. But if someone accepts that this is what it is, yeah, I mean, it could work. You know, my normal or your normal is not somebody else's normal.
Uh-huh.
So if a person's going to accept it and is willing to trade off, you know, that lack of total intimacy, but then I'll say to that person, if they're asking me my opinion, okay, this works for you, but if you have kids, I can almost guarantee your kids are going to have issues. Because kids aren't stupid. They recognize at a certain point that something unhealthy is going on. And you don't want to create that for your kids to feel like that's the new norm. Because all that's going to do is doom their future relationships as well.
And it does, because you repeat these same behaviors and patterns, and I see it happening all the time. It's sort of like what a woman wrote in my first book, The Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, that she was in a relationship with a man that was also physically abusive. I mean, he used to hit her. And she said her daughter grew up seeing that, and eventually when her daughter met somebody, that man abused her. And that's when she had that moment of, that bingo moment, like I like to call it, where she said, oh, my God, you know, I was willing to put up with this all these years, and that's all she saw. And now she's repeating my behavior all over again. And that's when she said, I'm leaving this marriage. I don't want to be that kind of a role model. I want her to stand up and walk away from a man who's beating her. And I always tell my women, if it's not good enough for your daughter, then it's not good enough for you. If your daughter would come to you and say, guess what, Mom, I met a wonderful man, he's just like that, you know, and you had to think about, would you want that for your daughter? Of course not. So would you say to her, oh, that's good, honey, I'm so glad you did, or would you say, run in the other direction? And I say, if you would say run, that means you need to leave also. You know, you can't stay there and linger in this horror and think that you're not going to be the example she looks up to. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, going back to the isolation and the shame, there's that loneliness. You know, loneliness is a killer.
Mm-hmm.
But then a person has to ask themselves and or realize that sometimes the most lonely place to be is in a relationship that lacks total intimacy. That can magnify your loneliness way more than staying in a relationship that's very unfulfilling. But I don't think a lot of, you know, people, you know, would see it that way, that their loneliness is actually magnified. Not to mention you're depriving yourself of having a healthy relationship with someone else, but you got to get out of this sick situation now. But if you don't feel like you're worthy, then you're not, you know, you're going to be too scared to do something. And that's another reason why going back to that support system, it is so important to hear from people that are going to validate you and help you feel good about yourself instead of, you know, walking around in shame.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, our time has run out, Dr. Ira Gellman. I can't thank you enough for all your valuable input and how wonderful you do. And I know our women will really appreciate your words of advice and kindness and compassion. And if anybody has questions for Dr. Gellman, you can send them to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll make sure that he gets your message and he will get back to you. So,
yeah, without question.
For sure. To all of our listeners, have a wonderful week. Ira, I love you. Thank you so much for being here with me.
Oh, it's
and
my pleasure.
We'll be back again next week. All right. Good night, everybody.
Okay. Good night.